Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. How you doing tonight? Is it hot where you are? Can you breathe? Is it raining? Is it flooding? Is there a hurricane? Are there tornadoes? Do you have to deal with Republicans on your way to work? In your church, synagogue, mosque? Thanks for tuning in tonight. My name is Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Cheney, I'm sure you saw this, Dick Cheney told Republicans in the Senate or the House or someplace that they weren't allowed to issue subpoenas in the case of the firings of the U.S. attorneys. And we'll have Patrick Leahy commenting on that in his press briefing yesterday. But what is what just defines Republicans and puts to the knife any argument that Republicans can lead is the fact that the dumb bastards believed him. They didn't even question it. They said, oh, okay, Dick. Thank you, sir. You guys can't issue subpoenas, so just do what we tell you, or we'll rip your heads off and urinate in your necks. Do you understand me? Are you real clear on that, especially you, McConnell, with your strange wife, huh? Yes, sir. Also, we're going to hear from Mensa Man tonight, speaking from Ottawa today about Iraq and foreign trade. So, yeah, moron sounds on the program tonight. You're not allowed to issue subpoenas. You are the Senate. You are the House. You sit there and shut up and do what we tell you. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
It's incredible, isn't it? Republicans just said, oh, okay, we didn't know. All right. This is from Charlene. Mike, I emailed you a while ago about setting up a march on Washington, and you read that email and stated your reasons why it would not work, reasons I do respect and understand. However, I got an email today from impeachbush.org, and apparently there is a march set up for September 15th. There apparently has been throwback from the administration on this already. I gather they are trying to stop it by suing someone for $10,000 for some infraction of our constitutional freedoms. Anyway, will you mention this? Will you go to the website and verify what I've said? Will you and your colleagues let Americans know about this? I really would hope they, impeachbush.org, would set up a signature site so all of us who cannot make it still have their voices heard. Thanks for your time. Sure, I recommend impeachbush.org. It's a great site. My statement still holds. I think there are other ways to fight this criminal regime. I think the most effective way would be a way that Americans will never, ever, ever put into play. And that is a total, complete, with the exception of the dumbass Republicans, a total and complete one-day strike. The French do it. The Indians under Gandhi did it. The Irish have done it. So many populations, the Palestinians have done it. So many populations have done this. And it usually brings whatever the oppressive move being forced upon the people by the government, if not to a standstill, at least it gets everyone's attention and allows the citizens of the country to say, wait a minute, why am I putting up with this? Now that I support. But it's something Americans, or at least citizens of the United States, will never do. We simply won't do it. I don't know why. Maybe it's because most of us are afraid we'll be fired or wind up on a subversive list or not be able to fly again or have our passports yanked. Or I have no idea. But that I support. As far as any more demonstrations, I'm not going to any more. I am not. The next demonstration I go to will be one where I go with a loaded weapon. Do you understand what I'm saying? Now, I'm not advocating that, NSA. I'm saying the next one I go to will be that one. I've had enough. I've been going to demonstrations for 40 years. I've had enough. And as I look back over my life about how effective, some of them were effective. There's no way of knowing how quantitatively effective they were. because events do have a way of unraveling on their own. But I would like to think that some of the demonstrations I participated in helped to bring about civil rights, helped to end the war, helped to impeach the bastard Nixon, helped to put at least a temporary dent in the nuclear weapons industry in this country. And I'm sure there are millions of people like me. You just reach a point in your age, in your time on this planet, where you say, okay, I've done that. I've done it. And I'm not giving up. I'm just saying the next demonstration I attend will be one where loaded weapons are a requirement. And between now and then, if somebody wants to send me an email touting a demonstration, sure, I'll mention it on the air. Charlene, you're damn right. Be happy to. Go to impeachbush.org. And it's right there at the top of the page, all the information for the September 15th demonstration in D.C. A California man of God, a Southern Baptist preacher, the Reverend Wiley Drake. Sounds like a cartoon character, doesn't it? It sounds like something from Looney Tunes. Here he is! Wiley Drake! The Reverend Wiley Drake! Wiley Drake, the first minister of the First Southern Baptist Church of Buena Park, California, used church stationery and an internet radio program to endorse former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee for president, and is now asking his followers to pray for the deaths of those who filed a complaint against him with the IRS. See, this dumb bastard doesn't realize or doesn't care that there really is a separation of church and state. You cannot use your tax-exempt status as one of these bloody, filthy churches and endorse a political candidate. Now, I realize Pat Robertson sort of just ripped that into a million pieces, but until Bush or somebody changes the law, you dumb old preacher, it's still on the books. You can't do it. So the Reverend Barry Lynn, Joe Kahn, and Jeremy Leeming of Americans United for Separation of Church and State got in touch with the IRS and asked them to investigate whether it was proper for the Reverend Wiley Drake to endorse Huckabee. Now, a campaign spokeswoman for Huckabee, Alice Stewart, said the campaign did not coordinate with Drake on any of the material he's distributed regarding this complaint by Americans United. Ms. Stewart said the campaign doesn't condone what she called, quote, evil comments, end quote, made by the minister. Praying for your death. You piece of human waste. The Reverend Wiley Drake said the Bible calls for imprecatory prayer when someone attacks the church. When someone attacks the church. And some of you people still wonder why I say a pox on all of them. I get emails from people who say, Mike, and they're sincere. They say, Mike, don't lump all of us Christians in with these right-wing nutcases. I have a hard time not doing it, because if liberal or progressive or, some of the good Christian organizations or churches or denominations were really serious about Jesus' work, wouldn't they? I mean, wouldn't they do something with these Pharisees? I mean, Jesus went into the temple and threw them out on their asses. I mean, he was pretty serious about it, wasn't he? Nah, I'm sorry. Christiane Amanpour starts her series tonight on the God warriors. The psychopaths in Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. And oh man, I wonder why she left out Hinduism. They're just as nuts. All right, we'll be back after the break. We're going to have a little thing here by Tucker Carlson, that combat veteran who has spent an awful lot of time in uniform defending the country. Tucker Carlson on MSNBC. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
While the people beg for mercy, gave them no relief. There's blood on your hands, mister, you'll answer for one day. And the tears you shed on that day won't wash your sins away. Will Jesus wash the blood stains from your hands? Will he welcome you into that peaceful land? Will he?
Got the flying monkey right blues? Here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
Real. 21 past the hour. So Tucker Carlson, according to opednews.com, I think it was yesterday, had an exchange with MSNBC military analyst, what's his name? He's a colonel. Oh, Jesus. Well, I've got it here someplace. I'll have it in a second. And They were talking about the op-ed piece that I read last night, Uncle Mike's Story Corner. You'll remember the question was raised, Colonel Jack Jacobs, you remember the question was raised, retired. The question was raised, how soon would it be before the schmucks and the halfwits and the right-wing cheeseheads started going after these soldiers, these combat veterans in mainstream media? Well, I don't know if Tucker's the first, because I don't listen to the pig man or that little weasel Hannity, but somebody sent me the video here. Tucker Carlson, according to Op-Ed News, proceeded to toss a bucket full of salt onto the tail of seven members of the 82nd Airborne who had that op-ed in New York Times the other day. The writer of this, and I'm sorry, I don't, Vian, is that the writer, writes, showing just how much he respects the troops' opinion on how well the surge is working and how most Iraqis feel about it, Tucker claimed, how the hell would they know? Now, keep in mind that Tucker Carlson's father is Richard Carlson. He's on the advisory committee of Scooter Libby's Legal Defense Fund, among other things. This is a right-wing family that is deeply connected to the Project for New American Century. Tucker Carlson on MSNBC, you know, he presents a, you know, kind of a scrubbed, bow-tied, little sweet little boy face, but his family is corrupt and evil, and so is he. But Tucker now apparently is very concerned, like many right-wingers have suddenly become, that our military is becoming politicized. Oh, really? Oh, damn. I'll tell you what, Tucker, put on a uniform, pick up a weapon, and go over there and, you know, form your own opinion. You know, take a few shots. Get a few shots. This is what he said. Quote, I'm uncomfortable with it, the op-ed piece, since there's been this separation between active duty military and politics, that the service members kind of act out the policy of the U.S. government, right or wrong, but they... See, right or wrong. No, Tucker, there was something called the Nuremberg... Oh, never mind. But they don't comment on it because you want civilian control of the military, and that has always been our tradition. And two, I'm wondering if weighing in on a political question such as this doesn't squander the awesome moral authority that these guys already have. The awesome moral authority. What moral authority comes with invading a country and occupying it after murdering it for 11 years? You dumb son of a bitch. What kind of moral authority are you talking about, Tucker? Moral authority? To butcher a civilian population in a country where we have no business being? No, that's not moral authority. That's banditry. That's criminal activity. Those are war crimes. Well, naturally, Colonel Jack Jacobs offered some balance to Carlson's statements. Jacobs said, quote, I do think there's some detrimental, there's some detriment to the moral authority you're talking about. See, he's saying the same thing. I think that these soldiers thought they were performing a public service by making the public aware of what they see happening at the lowest possible levels. But, of course, we only see a broad brush of the strategy. We don't see what happens tactically. Really? And why is that, Jack? So I think they thought they were performing a public service, and in a certain respect they are. Don't forget now that we're in an environment that you can get information in a wide variety of ways. No longer do you have to watch the news or listen to you or me. They're soldiers all the time sending back dispatches from the forward edges of the battle area on the net, so it's difficult to police. Now, I don't know what the hell Jacobs is trying to say here, Truth Seeker, but it sounds like he's, you know, maybe defending the soldiers just a tad against this punk Tucker Carlson's assault. Jack goes on to say, the attitudes that we see in this op-ed piece may have been the same kinds of attitudes we might have had 40 years ago in Vietnam, but you didn't hear about them 40 years ago. You hear about them today because of the new methods of disseminating information. And then this little punk-ass Tucker says, "Yeah, I'm not sure what to think. You see, like most Americans, I instinctively respect those who are currently serving in a war zone." Absolutely. No, you don't, you little rat bastard. You do not. You respect people like O'Hanlon and who is the other guy? Michael O'Hanlon and Kenneth Pollack. You respect them. They don't serve in a war zone. Here are eight guys who just came back from a war zone, and you're not respecting them, you lying little twit. And then he says, "I'm not sure whether the surge is working or not. I honestly don't know, and I'm not taking position on that. I don't have the information. But I instinctively distrust sentences like this one," and this is from the op-ed, Tucker says. And the quote is, "The vast majority of Iraqis feel insecure and view us as an occupation force." And Tucker takes offense to that. He wants to know how these eight soldiers know what the hell the vast majority of Iraqis think about anything. I'll tell you. You know what happened? These eight soldiers found a way to catapult the propaganda, and Tucker Carlson got his britches in a wad. This little cowardly son of a bitch whose father would like to turn another criminal loose on the American public. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Peace train sounding loud. Glide on the peace train.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
It is 26 before the hour. Well, you knew this was coming. Another Bush thug. This is according to alternate.org. Adam Howard blogging there. Another Bush thug appointed to a position not qualified for and ends up responsible for the deaths of innocent Americans. This time, it's Richard Stickler. He's the useless piece of human waste that is now the Mine and Health Safety Administrator, right? And we're talking about the tragedy in Utah. ABC reports that Stickler used to be a mining executive who, according to various media reports, ran mines which had several fatalities and, quote, an incident rate that was often twice the national average, end quote. In the first place, truth seekers, you know, why purely rhetorical question, don't answer. Why appoint as the head of mine safety and health a mine owner who does not send his children or relatives 3,000 feet underground to possibly die? Why not appoint someone who has spent 20 years in the mines? Why not appoint someone from the United Mine Workers if that organization still exists? Why not? Yeah, no, well, of course not. And like I say, a purely rhetorical question, don't answer. You know the answer, so do I. Stickler's nomination to head this organization was twice rejected by Congress and rejected when Republicans were still in charge. This guy is so bad that even these filthy, corrupt Republicans rejected him. Now, reportedly, the senators rejected him because they were concerned about Stickler's safety record when he operated mines. After his nomination was twice rejected by the Senate, Bush gave Stickler the mine safety job with a recess appointment. Huh? So, more death, more blood on George W. Bush and this corrupt administration. More of it. It just doesn't stop. How can this son of a bitch walk? Every time Bush walks, he squishes. He is so full and saturated with other people's blood. Soldiers, workers, contractors, Iraqis, children. He is a walking, just a huge, sucking blood corpuscle, Bush, and none of it's his. It's horrifying. Horrifying. So you knew that was in there. You knew that was coming, didn't you? You probably already knew it. Every single organization, regulatory organization that this country has is now run and has been run for at least the past 4 or 5 years by a political hack who is responsible for sickness, death, destruction, misjudgments, disinformations, lies, politicizing every single aspect of government, death to the Constitution, up with torture. This is what we've become. Man. Oh, and let's not forget Gail Norton. Remember her, the Department of Interior cabinet member who was a former lobbyist for the lead industry? Well, according to McClatchy newspapers, you know, we've been talking about lead in the children's toys coming from China and how lead is, you know, lead brought down the Roman Empire. I don't think there's too much question about that. Lead is the, I believe I read today, the heaviest metal that is not radioactive. It's a real killer. It's an absolute murderous element. Well, the Bush administration and China have worked together to undermine efforts to tighten rules designed to ensure that lead paint isn't in toys, bibs, jewelry, and other children's products. Both China, the government of China, and this corrupt, filthy Bush crime family have fought efforts to better police imported toys from China. Huh? You knew this too, didn't you? According to McClatchy newspapers, lead paint is toxic when ingested by children and can cause brain damage or death. It's been mostly banned in the U.S. since the late 70s, but is permitted in the coating of toys, provided it amounts to less than 6 parts per million. Yeah, it's murderous stuff for our children. You know, I asked the other day, or was it today, why do Republicans hate living, breathing children? It's permitted in the coating of toys. The Bush administration has hindered regulations on lead on two fronts. It stalled efforts to press for greater inspections of imported children's products, and it altered the focus of the Consumer Product Safety Commission, moving that regulatory agency, here we go again, from aggressive protection of consumers to a more friendly approach to the Chinese killers who want to make your child dead. The director of regulatory policy at OMB Watch, which is a government watchdog group formed way back in 83, said, quote, "The overall philosophy is regulations are bad and they're too large a cost for industry and the market will take care of it. That's been the philosophy of the Bush administration," end quote. Yeah, that's right. The market will take care of it. Have enough children with mental illnesses, have enough children die from ingesting lead paint off their toys, and eventually people will come around and realize that Company X that produces these toys, well, gosh, two of our kids are dead from playing with the toys. Let's take the toys away from any further children we might have, and we'll punish the company that way. You evil bastards. You evil Bush bastards. Today, more than 80% of all U.S. toys are made in China, and few of them get inspected. And I've gotten a little flurry of emails here in the past couple of weeks saying, you know, don't drink the Kool-Aid on China, that this is all an effort by the Bush crime family to make China look bad. Or you know, the real problem, Mike, is not China, it's capitalism. Or, Mike, the Chinese are just doing what everyone else has done. You know what I say to all that nonsense and hog snot? Anybody who sits in a factory, any place on this planet, and deliberately and consciously orders his or her workers to produce a product that will kill you, and I don't care if it's an American tobacco company or a toy company in China, I don't care. That is an evil, unconscionable son of a bitch, and if there was an afterlife, they would burn in hell forever. So don't talk to me about the Chinese. They know what they're doing. Last December, the Sierra Club sued the Bush administration after the EPA, you remember the EPA, said no to a petition that would have required health and safety studies for companies that use lead in children's products. The Environmental Protection Agency, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, the Mine Safety and Health Commission, every single organization that the Bush crime family has touched has turned into nothing more than a sump hole of death and destruction for people who come in contact with these organizations and a profit line for people who have corrupted them. But Bush, the impeachment of these bastards is off the table. Yeah, we don't want to impeach them. Nah. It looked like tit for tat where it concerned Clinton. The Environmental Protection Agency last December said no to a petition that would require health and safety studies for companies that use lead in children's products. No, the market regulate itself. Enough dead children. And you know, parents will wise up. In the New York Times yesterday, the Bush crime family continuing its fight to stop states from expanding the popular children's health insurance program. The Bush crime family has now adopted some new standards that would make it much more difficult, if not impossible, for certain states to extend coverage to children in middle-income families. You see, administration officials, the Bush crime family, have always said, well, the children's health insurance program is for poor children. What constitutes a poor child now? Isn't a poor child a child whose family can't afford health insurance? And why does that matter? Why is it means tested on a kid, for Christ's sake? This is a child! Why isn't there health insurance available for every child in this country? There is for everybody over 65! They hate children. They hate children unless they're snowflakes or zygotes or little squirming masses of cells about the size of a period after a sentence. Those they love. The Bush crime family says, no, what we want to do, the reason we're cutting the budget and taking the money away and making it hard on states and requiring all this stuff is because, you know, we want to return the Children's Health Insurance Program to its original focus. You know, the little low-income little rugrats. You know, we want to make sure the program doesn't become a substitute for private health coverage because, you know, we are beholden to the private health coverage industry. 9 million children without health insurance in this country? Well, that's a shame. Don't know what to tell you. But we don't care. Show us a container full of fertilized ova and we'll jump all over it. Show us a room full of five-year-olds who can't have their teeth checked, who can't get their vaccinations, who walk around with no glasses, and we'll tell you, well, sorry, it's for poor kids. You evil bastards. There's more on this. I'll share it with you when we come back. I'm so pissed off tonight. Maybe it's the prednisone I've been taking. What do you think? Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M.
And I am not at the wheel of control. And I am guilty, I am war, and I am the root of all evil. Lord, and I can't drive on the left side of the road. It's a hard life, it's a hard life, it's a very hard life. If we poison our children with hatred, then the hard life is all that they'll know. And there ain't no place in this world for these kids to go.
You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by. And so,
one way you can help is to find a child who needs somebody older in their life to say, I love you.
Yeah, that'll help. That'll prevent the little boogers from getting measles or going blind or eating lead, huh? Hey, I love you! In his budget request back in February, Bush proposed strict limits on family income for the child health program, right? Huh? In other words, you know, if you're making X, you qualify. If you make X plus $5, you're thrown off the rolls. Huh? That makes a lot of sense. But in voting this month, August, to renew the program for another 5 years, neither House of Congress accepted that proposal for the program. Isn't that a shock? That's because both houses of Congress are in control of the Democrats. Now, this program, the Children's Health Insurance Program, has support from governors of both parties. Yeah, it does. When you get to the governor level, because that's where it's played out. That's where all this happens, on the state level. Republicans like Schwarzenegger of California, Pawlenty of Minnesota, they support it. Even this backwards half-wit jerkwad here in Georgia, Sonny Perdue, supports it. Because we have something like 500,000 children on it here in Georgia. This is Georgia, for God's sake. When the Senate passed a bill to extend the program this month, 18 Republican senators voted for it. 18! Oh, my goodness! That means almost twice as many said to the children of this country who do not have health insurance, screw you, you little curtain climber. How about that? Now, there's more. You need to do your own research on this. It's in Monday's New York Times. Robert Pear wrote it. In the Senate debate this month, several Republicans who did not vote in favor of this offered a proposal. Once again, these crappy, filthy thugs, they wanted to require states to cover 95% of low-income children before allowing states to expand eligibility. Now, in the first place, it's a physical, literal impossibility to contact 95% of all the eligible children for this program. Why is that? Well, how many of them don't have any way you can get in contact with them until they show up at public health clinics or emergency rooms? Max Baucus, the Democrat from Montana, who's chairman of the Finance Committee, argued against that idea. He said, quote, no state can meet 95%. No state currently meets 95%, end quote. New Jersey comes the closest. They cover 70%. But you see, by proposing it that way, the Republicans say, Republicans in the Senate can say, well, you know, all right, we'll offer this, even though it goes against our insurance industry patrons, even though it doesn't speak well for the free market, you know, providing health insurance to these little boogers. Now, keep this in mind, Truth Seeker. The CHIPS program is not free. Families pay for it. That's right. Families pay a premium. And I believe it's on a sliding scale, depending on how poor or how middle class they are. What do people want right now? I'll tell you what people want. People are making $50,000, $60,000 a year, a family of six. Do you think that's an income? What have I got right in front of me here? This is from a business section, New York Times today. Wages in this country have remained flat, have gone down every year for the past 5 years. That's the first time that's happened since the end of World War II. Do you hear me? So what constitutes a family in need of health insurance for their kid? What constitutes a family that can't afford health insurance? And you right-wingers, shut up and sit down. You don't know. You couldn't find your ass with both hands, and you make no sense at all. Don't want to hear from you. But what is it about Republicans that they can be more loyal? And again, rhetorical question: more loyal, more suck up to their pharmaceutical and health industrial complex patrons, the ones who give them money, lots of money, like Billy Tozen, this thug who got the Social Security so-called drug insurance plan through. I mean, incredible stuff. And disregard the children of this country. You hypocritical right-wing thugs, you really are. And I'll tell you something. Was it the Sermon on the Mount? It was someplace where Jesus said, "Suffer the little children to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of heaven." You people who have constructed your Christian mythology, I'll tell you something. There is a white-hot hell waiting for you. There really is. There really is. Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. Just to finish up on this children's health insurance program that the Bush crime family wants to effectively destroy. You know, forget the half-baked excuses that they want to put it back to the kids originally who fell under this program or were helped by this program, I should say, and so-called poor children, you know, below the poverty rate, $20,000 a year for a family of four. That's not what they want to do at all. They want to destroy it because it's taking money away from their patrons, the health insurance industry, the pharmaceutical industrial industry, the whole thing. So I'm sure most people who give a damn read that New York Times story about the Bush crime family going to make it more difficult for states to extend this program to children whose families may not be officially in the poverty range, and who comes up with that crap anyway? I'll tell you what, go ahead, have a family of four and see if you can live on $16,000 or whatever the hell it is. Just try it, huh? Anyway, our good friend Dave Sirota, writing at Sirota Blog, his blog site, he says... He read it, and he said there are two nuggets in the New York Times article that really stick out to me. The first is in this passage. Sirota writes, quoting the story, "If a state wants to set its income limit above 250% of the poverty level, that would be $51,000 for a family of four. If a state wants to do that, Mr. Smith is the guy who makes these determinations, Smith. Mr. Smith said, quote, the state must establish a minimum of a one-year period of uninsurance for individuals before they can receive public coverage," end quote. So basically, what these bastards are saying, the pro-states' rights Republican Party, is now on record saying that if a state legislature wants to extend coverage to a family of four making over $51,000 a year, that state's legislature must insist that the family go without health insurance for a year. You Republicans make me want to vomit blood. All of you are demons. You are demons. And Sirota points out the other nugget. Quote, in his letter, Mr. Smith said the new standards would apply to states that previously received federal approval to cover children with family incomes exceeding 250% of the poverty level. Such states should amend their state plans to meet federal expectations within 12 months, or the Bush administration, quote, may pursue corrective action, end quote, Mr. Smith said. Now, this Smith devil is the administrator on the federal level of this program. And as Sirota points out, this is threatening, deliberately intimidating, Big Brother-style language. The federal government may pursue corrective action against whom? In states that expand their CHIP programs, are federal agents going to swarm in and revoke publicly subsidized health insurance from working class families and force those families to retroactively pay back the aid they received? Is that corrective action? These people are unbelievable. They're just unfreaking believable. Corrective action. George W. Bush, this so-called compassionate conservative, this Nazi airhead who loves fertilized ova that are frozen in vats, but hates children with a depth and breadth and width that is stunning. He hates little kids, and he hates 18-year-olds. Send the 18-year-olds to their deaths in Iraq or Afghanistan, and the little kids, screw them. What an evil man. What just the evil of this guy is bottomless. And remember what Bush said a few weeks ago. Oh, they've got health insurance. They can go to the emergency room. Remember that. Do you suppose Bush or any of his demonic siblings or their corrupted offspring have ever gone to an emergency room with a child having a fever of 103 and coughing, and it's 9 o'clock in the morning? No, they don't, do they? And then sit there and wait while the kid gets sicker and sicker and sicker. Do you suppose that ever happened to any of these evil sons of bitches in the Republican Party who voted against insuring children? Suffer the little children to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of God. Who said that? George Bush's favorite philosopher. Man. So to summarize, from the Carpetbagger Report, not only has the Bush White House strongly resisted a bipartisan congressional effort to expand the Children's Health Insurance Plan, now Bush is forcing states to limit access. For Bush, it doesn't matter that more U.S. children would go without health care. It doesn't even matter that this latest effort would impose burdensome regulations from the federal government on states, some of which are run by Republicans, who want to do more on their own to expand health care access. What matters is Bush's philosophical resistance to a popular government program that offers uninsured children a chance. This is what is so vile about it. He has a philosophical resistance to helping children. For Christ's sake, is there no limit to this man's criminality, his immorality, his amorality? Is there no limit? Paul Krugman explained the dynamic quite well about a month ago. This is what Krugman said. Why should Mr. Bush fear that insuring uninsured children would lead to a further federalization of health care, even though nothing like that is actually in either the Senate plan or the House plan? It's not because he thinks the plans wouldn't work. It's because he's afraid that they would. That is, he fears that voters, having seen how the government can help children, would ask why it can't do the same for adults. And there you have the core of Mr. Bush's philosophy. He wants the public to believe that government is always the problem, never the solution. But it's hard to convince people that government is always bad when they see it doing good things, like the CHIPS program. So his philosophy says that the government must be prevented from solving problems, even if it can. In fact, the more good a proposed government program would do, the more fiercely it must be opposed. End quote. Paul Krugman. And if children go without as a result, so be it. You evil, evil, evil man. But Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid say impeachment is off the table. Yeah, it's not just health care. Americans earned a smaller average income in 2005 than in 2000. That's the fifth consecutive year that we've had to make ends meet with less money than at the peak of the last economic expansion. Total income listed on tax returns grew every year after World War II, with a single one-year exception, until 2001, making the five-year period of lower average income and 4 years of lower total income a new experience for the majority of Americans born since 1945. Every year, incomes grew after World War II until 2001. And since then, it's gone down every year.
Your daddy's here, and it never will forget you. I will take you home. I will take you home. Gonna carry you back home in my arms. I will take you home.
And we're a country of deep compassion. We care. One of the great things about America, one of the beauties of our country, is that when we see a young, innocent child blown up by an IED, we cry.
You filthy man. Barry writes in, the subject line says, head explosion in Bush. Barry writes, remain always aware of what Dr. Justin Frank has said. Bush has no conscience whatsoever. This from a psychiatrist. Anyone who for a moment thinks Bush can't sink lower is a willful fool. Not being willfully foolish is how I keep my head from exploding. Yeah, I guess he's referring to Bush on the couch. I know that. It's shocking to me. It's very seldom in my life where I have such contact, forced, but such contact as I have to have with Bush, because I live under his power, that I have such contact with a totally amoral individual, someone who is devoid of just the normal, and by that I should say normative responses, or whether they're conditional responses, learned responses, human responses, call them whatever you want. But I, you know, like most of us, I go about my business with a fairly limited circle of people that I come into intimate contact with. You know, when I'm at the farmer's market or the gas station or the dry cleaners, wherever the hell I go, you know, I'm not in con- I don't know, I might be walking through a crowd of mass killers. I have no idea. But the people with whom I relate, either because I have to or because I choose to, and that includes this whole political class now, I have to, I very seldom come across someone who is so lacking in anything resembling human compassion. That whole shtick back in 1999 about a compassionate conservative, most of us who were stunned that Bush was actually going to get the nomination thanks to the American news media and reportage class, stunned to hear this rat bastard referred to as a compassionate anything. This has been a horrifying experience. It's been a horrifying experience the last 7.5 years with this monstrous, amoral, unfeeling, unthinking idiot. The damage that's been done to us. And I'm not just talking about our institutions or our documents or our belief system. I'm talking about the damage that's been done to us. It's incalculable. Let's do some phone calls. The number here is 800-989-1480. Let's start with Kevin, who is calling from D.C., listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm okay. I wanted to address the issue that you talked about earlier, why Americans aren't out on the street.
Yeah.
It's a series of bread and circuses. Like the ancient Romans said, provide that, and you can get away with anything.
That's pretty much true.
You know, Americans, and I just came from doing a business trip out in the Midwest, and it's like they are so damn gullible. It's like, to me, it's such a naivete about them, you know, people in these red states. They're like hobbits. If you ever read The Lord of the Rings, hobbits represented America.
Yeah. Well, I kind of liked Frodo and the rest of them, but I know what you mean.
You have to understand, the Lord of the Rings trilogy was based on the politics of Europe during the First World War.
So I've heard.
And the hobbits represent the United States, this plump, doughy, innocent, naive country.
Yeah.
And we still are in many ways. And we're led by very dangerous people, unlike the hobbits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We really are. And it's like, you know, it's like, at times, as being a New Yorker, they looked at me as being arrogant and cheated. And
because,
it's not that.
Because you're a New Yorker.
Well, that too, and because politically, you know, I said a bad thing or two about the president, which is unthinkable towards them. It's like, they truly are foregone believers.
It's astonishing. It's astonishing to me, Kevin. You get to travel. I don't do that much traveling anymore. And you come across this, what you're talking about, in a more direct way than I do. And it's just, but I still remember when I used to travel this country back and forth, up and down constantly, and was just absolutely shocked and stunned at the level and the depth of political idiocy and willful ignorance about so much that was so critical to self-government. It was just a shock to my entire system, and you're still going through it, pal.
Yeah. And, you know, it is what it is. A lot of it is just willful ignorance, like you said, and a lot of it is, you know, they just don't want to believe that there is no Santa Claus, kind of.
Yeah, like, there's that, and there's also the aspect of brainwashing, because so many people that, you know, appear to be normal people have been so, had their brains just scrubbed by constant talk radio, by constant filthy media, mainstream media. It's a shame. Kevin, thanks for checking in, pal. Drive safely. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
I got something to say, and I thought it might be worth a mention. If you're not pissed off at the world, then you're just not paying attention. You can turn off the TV and go about your day. But just 'cause you don't see it, it don't mean it's gone away.
Welcome back. About 25 before the hour here. Let's see, where are we? Back to your phone calls. Susan is calling from Oakland Park, Florida, listening on WINZ. Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Susan.
I also called about the first topic, but I also that you introduced about protesting and petitions, but I just heard something on the news that I've got to tell you about after.
Okay. Cancer?
After.
Okay.
I gave up signing petitions and protesting at least 4 years ago when it became obvious that the Bush crime family couldn't care less how many people opposed them or who they were. And then I wrote a letter to the editor of Slate or Salon, I don't remember which, saying that the only way to hurt these filthy people is where it counts to them, and that's in the pocketbook.
That's right.
And I proposed a date 2 or 3 months down the road for a one-day buy absolutely nothing day except in a true emergency. Mm-hmm. I thought it was the perfect solution because it only required people to not do something, not spend money.
Exactly.
I got one response.
Yeah.
What the hell's the matter with us? Are we so complacent that we can't even agree to do nothing?
It's pretty weird. You know, if we were Indians and this were the country of India back in the 40s, and all of a sudden you advanced the tape till now, we would still be living under British rule.
Yep.
You understand what I mean by that?
Absolutely.
I don't understand what it is. Maybe it's because we had 200 years, at least white people, of being complacent about what was given to us by the founders, what was taken from the people here originally, given to us by the founders, and then shored up and developed by black people we brought over here from Africa. And whites, I think, I don't mean to sound like a racist here, but I think whites just became so complacent. I think that's why there was such resistance to the civil rights movement. I think that's one of the reasons that nobody gives a damn about Native Americans. I think that's why people, for the most part, just don't want to bother with so-called minority groups or God forbid, children, because we, you know, the ruling class in this country, and a lot of people, even white people on the poverty line, think of themselves as being in the ruling class, at least on a racial basis. So many people felt they had it so easy. So why protest? And little bit at a time, in tiny little increments and slices, everything is taken away. And I think that's where we are. That's where we got to, Susan.
You think it's the frog in boiling water syndrome?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Can I squeeze in
go ahead.
About a minute? Yeah. I just heard on CNN Radio News, Bush said today about al-Maliki, and I got the quote, I think, about as perfect as I could. There may be a word or two different, but he said, if the government doesn't respond to the needs of the people, we'll replace the government.
I don't think he said we'll replace the government.
Okay.
But the implication was the government should be replaced. I about fell off my chair this afternoon when I heard that.
There is no irony in the Bush administration.
No, none.
There isn't.
None.
Or
none.
Any recognition. I mean, they're clueless.
No,
except when it comes to making money and
stealing,
retaining power.
Stealing money.
Okay.
Stealing money. Yeah, you're right. You're right. So, Maliki, we talked about that on this program a couple of months ago. Maliki is toast. He's in Syria, he's in Iran, he's trying everything he can to find some place to run and hide, and it's just, I don't know whether it's going to happen. Hey, thanks a lot, Susan. Take care, okay?
You're welcome. Great to hear you sounding better.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Take care. We do we have anything from that press briefing? We do? Let me take a look here. Kathy says yes. Oh, that's right. The Three Amigos conference up in Quebec. Oh, Ottawa. He's in Ottawa. Oh, okay. The Harper of Canada and Calderon of Mexico and Chucklenuts of the United States are in Ottawa to discuss NAFTA, the U.S.-Mexican border, and other quote American end quote issues. Now, after all the necessary and redundant howdy-do's and thank-you's, they took questions from the press. And the ones we have were directed to the moron. This American reporter asks Chucklenuts about Iraq. Here's the question. Mr. President, yesterday Senator Levin, chairman of the Armed Services Committee, said that the Iraqi parliament ought to oust Prime Minister Maliki and his government for being politically unable to deliver political unity there, for utterly failing on that point. I'm wondering what your reaction is to Senator Levin's comment and whether you think Maliki has lost credibility.
I made a decision to send more troops into Iraq to provide enough security for reconciliation to have a time to take place. It appears to me, and I certainly don't want to prejudge General David Petraeus' report back home, but there is some progress being made.
The report, of course,
One aspect of my decision is working. There's a bottom-up reconciliation taking place. It's noticeable and tangible and real, where people at the grassroots level are sick and tired of the violence, sick and tired of the radicalism, and they want a better life, and they're beginning to reject the extremists that have the desire to have a safe haven, for example, from which to launch further attacks on America. In other words, there's a process taking place. And the fundamental question is, will the government respond to the demands of the people? And if the government doesn't respond to the demands of the people, they will replace the government. That's up to the Iraqis to make that decision, not American politicians. The Iraqis will decide. They have decided they want a constitution. They have elected members to their parliament. And they will make the decisions, just like democracies do.
Like this democracy does? Be wary of what you say, you ignorant rabbit. If the government doesn't respond to the demands of the people, they will replace the government. Totally unaware of what they're saying, this Bush moron. Or completely aware and aware of the irony, aware of the sarcasm, aware of the hypocrisy, but also aware that the American public is asleep. Absolutely asleep. Still answering the same reporter's question about Iraq, Dim Sun continues once again. Chuckle Nuts doesn't understand, or does he, the irony implied in his own answer. If Iraq is a dangerous terrorist breeding ground now, it's only because he made it that way. Or rather, Cheney made it that way. And in the process reversed himself from his position back in 1994, right?
And the question that we have to face in America is it worth it? Does it matter whether or not this young democracy survive? Is it in our national interests that this difficult experiment with democracy in the Middle East work? And I've come to the conclusion that it is. It's in our interests. Because a failed Iraq could easily yield a safe haven from which the extremists and radicals who once attacked us could attack us again.
What?
A failed Iraq would become a recruiting tool.
You made it
that way.
For the
very same people that still want to attack America. So it's in our interests.
You made it a recruiting tool. And if you're so interested in an experiment with democracy in the Middle East, why not go to a country that has some resources and assets and working infrastructure? Let me see if I can think of one. How about Saudi Arabia, you hypocritical son of a bitch? Why don't you start there? Why a broken-down country like Iraq that can't even keep the lights on? Oh, wait a minute, I have another one. How about Kuwait? How about let's bring democracy to... Wait, there's another one. United Arab Emirates. Why don't you start there? Oh, wait! I've got a real good one. Egypt! How about democracy? No. Jordan! You filthy, filthy man. History is going to judge you in such a harsh way. It'll be a wonder if your name appears in the history books. On the possibility of some new trade agreements between the three amigos, Bush had something to say about that, too. You know, they're up there for the Security and Prosperity Partnership. Anytime you hear that coming out of Bush's mouth, it's like a developer that plans a new subdivision and they call it, Meadowlark Haven. What that means is that's where meadowlarks used to live. And who moves into Meadowlark Haven, into the McMansions? People who drive Hummers and SUVs that say,
I support wildlife. All the specially
selected. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
So much more about the good guys.
Bo, bo, bo.
Won't you stand by the flag? Was the question unasked. Won't you join in and fight with the Allies? What could we say? We're only 25 years old.
With 25 sweet summers and hot fires in the cold.
This kind of life makes that violence unthinkable.
We'd like to play hockey. Have kids and grow old.
Fighters for Texaco.
You know, we live in a global world, and that creates uncertainty in some. I understand that.
I like this email from KW. Subject line regarding Maliki, whatever the hell his name is, in Iraq. You think Maliki knows of Diem? That's the subject line. Just like Diem of South Vietnam, Maliki's time is limited. Another victim of American imperialism. Yeah, that's true. What Diem got it in April of '63, and Kennedy got it in November of '63. Didn't it work out like that? Yeah, I think it did. It's only about 6 months apart. Yeah, you signed an agreement with the U.S. CIA or DIA or the U.S. government, especially during the Cold War, or what remained of the Cold War, even up until the late 80s. Your ass was toast eventually. Eventually, they the Bush crime family or some other government agency would get you. You know, I think about Manuel Noriega. I think about the Marcos family. I think about Batista. All these people who were overthrown. Well, not Batista. He was overthrown by real revolutionaries. But in Ngo Dinh Diem in South Vietnam was, I think, a classic example. The one who does not fit that pattern was one that we made deals with in the late 80s, and that was Osama bin Laden. And let us never forget Saddam Hussein. That poor bastard. We just egged him on like riding a bareback with a whip and spurs, put him up wet, didn't even walk him down, and when it came time, we hanged his ass. But man, it was a good run, wasn't it? How many Iraqis and Iranians were killed in that six-year-long war? 2 million? Huh? Got them! Jesus, and we got a few Kurds, too, to satisfy our Turkish subordinates over there. Ah! God, we're cool! I wonder if Mr. Al-Maliki knows the name Ngo Dinh Diem. One more email here. This is from Jack in San Diego. Mike, thanks for your passionate comments tonight about Bush and his obscene opposition to the CHIPS program. While I knew about this issue for some time, I can only find the emotional energy to get really pissed about so many issues. And for this one, I just did not have the energy. Man, I know what you mean, Jack. Until tonight. And listening to your logic, and I had one of those aha moments. I always wondered why the real powers that be, call it corporate America, the controllers of the real government, what Webster Tarpley shines his lantern on, the Bilderbergs, etc., why would anyone want a completely sinister mental midget bastard like Bush as president? But you touched on it tonight. Bush cares for nothing or no one, and the real powers wanted exactly that type of pathological personality, because only that type of person could or would advance the agenda so beautifully illustrated in the Zeitgeist movie with such ruthlessness. That's another movie you recommended a few weeks ago, and I was stunned by it for 2 hours. Not because I did not know most of the facts, but because of the eloquence of the movie's message. I, too, have given up on demonstrations. I was at Kent State. Jack. Yeah, the Zeitgeist movie, if you watch it, I don't think you're going to see anything. It's online. Just go to zeitgeistmovie.com and download it. It runs an hour, 56 minutes. And you won't really see anything there that you don't already know. This one, number 18? Okay, let's go back to the Three Amigos. On the possibility of some new trade agreements between Canada, the U.S., and Mexico, this reporter says to Bush, as you three leaders meet here, there are a growing number of people in each of your countries who have expressed concern about this security and prosperity partnership. So this is addressed to all three of you. Can you say today that this is not a prelude to a North American union, similar to a European union? Are there plans to build some kind of superhighway connecting all three countries? And do you believe all of these theories about a possible erosion of national identity stem from a lack of transparency about this partnership? Now listen to this arrogant twit's answer.
You know, there are some who would like to frighten our fellow citizens into believing that relations between us are harmful for our respective peoples. I just believe they're wrong. I believe it's in our interest to trade. I believe it's in our interest to dialogue. I believe it's in our interest to work out common problems. I'm here representing my nation. I feel strongly that the United States is a force for good. And that I feel strongly that by working with our neighbors, we can be a stronger force for good.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate that question. I'm amused by the difference between what actually takes place in the meetings and what some are trying to, you know, say takes place. It's quite comical, actually, when you realize the difference between reality and what some people are talking on TV about.
Jesus, does this dumb little man really not understand when he makes a statement like that? Just shifting the focus from this so-called security and prosperity partnership, which is a total scam. I think everyone knows that. Oh, my God, please don't even try, Bush. You are so 5 years ago. Don't even try. But if you shift his comments away from that idiotic agreement that I would hope that the Canadian Parliament will have nothing to do with, as far as Calderon is concerned in Mexico, he's just another proto-fascist. If Bush tells him to jump, he will. But if you just shift a little bit, I'm amused, he says, by the difference between what actually takes place in the meetings and what some people are trying to say takes place. It's quite comical when you realize the difference between reality and what some people are talking on TV about. Yeah, George. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova, and stick around. We have another hour to go. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. So here we want you to hear now this stuff from Patrick Leahy's press conference yesterday. The way this happened, Cheney told the Republicans a couple of years ago that, or last year, or what, I don't know, that the Republican-led Congress was not allowed to issue subpoenas against the Bush crime family. And that's not shocking because Cheney's a psychopathic, vampirous bastard who will say anything. What is shocking is that the Republican leadership apparently believed him. So yesterday, Leahy revealed that the Bush crime family had missed its 2:30 p.m. deadline yesterday to turn over documents to the Senate Judiciary Committee regarding whatever legal justifications these Nazis can come up with for the National Security Agency's eavesdropping program, right? Now, the committee had already pushed back the original July 18th deadline twice after the White House requested more time. So the story is, Leahy said the administration's stonewalling amounted to contempt of a valid order of the Congress. And Leahy pointed out that those subpoenas were passed by broad bipartisan votes. In fact, the Senate Judiciary Committee is the in the conservative-led 109th Congress, which was chaired by Specter, also attempted to ask questions about the program's legal justification. But that's when Cheney said to Specter, "No, you're not allowed to." It's obvious that somebody doesn't understand the separation of powers, but never mind. This would be murderously funny if it just weren't so murderous. So here it is. Leahy held this press conference about the Bush crime family's refusal to respond to his committee now, his Judiciary Committee subpoenas, regarding the legal justification for ending the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution.
The administration's failure to comply with the Judiciary Committee's subpoena for its legal analysis gives me, as chairman, very, very little comfort. I received a letter this morning from the Office of the Vice President identifying some documents that would be responsive to the committee's subpoena. Now, the acknowledgement of these documents is a good first step. I don't know why it's taken so long, but it's a good first step, and it should be followed by the administration turning them over, which, of course, is what we requested in the subpoena. I've worked in good faith with this administration. I first sought this information voluntarily. I accommodated requests for time. But when the request for more time was simply followed by delay upon delay, we issued subpoenas and a bipartisan vote, and even then, when the subpoenas weren't followed through, we gave them more time. Time is up.
Oh, what are you going to do, Senator? With all due respect, to say that Cheney's identifying some of the documents and acknowledge some of them that might be responsive to the committee subpoena, to say what Senator Leahy says here, the acknowledgement of these documents is a good first step. I don't know why it's taken so long, but it's a good first step. What the hell does that mean? It means that Senator Patrick Leahy is part of the problem, not part of the solution. A good first step. What are you doing, reaching over and giving Cheney a reach around? Isn't Leahy the one that Cheney told to go F himself on the floor of the Senate? And now Leahy, was it Leahy? And now Leahy stands there and says, well, that's a good first step. Good dog. Now, how about the next step? And then he says, I've worked in good faith with this administration. One question, Senator, why? What has this administration done in 6 years that would indicate to you they can be dealt with on any level other than dealing with proto-fascists? What, Senator Leahy? Tell me one thing. Oh, cat got your tongue? He goes on. Leahy then puts to rest the ridiculous notion that Cheney is immune from such subpoenas because he's not part of the executive branch. He may not be part of the human branch, but as long as he's vice president, he is part of the executive branch.
In the administration's response today, they claim the office of the vice president is not part of the executive office of the president. So some kind of fourth branch of government. Well, that's wrong. Both the United States Code says that it is part of the president. Oh, incidentally, at least this morning, as I left Vermont, I checked the White House website. And even their own website, this morning at least, says that the executive office of the that the vice president is part of the executive office of the president.
Leahy sounds like a 10-year-old. He sounds like a 10-year-old!
It's not part of the executive office, so it's some kind of fourth branch of government? Pardon me while I pick a booger out of my nose here. It's part of a fourth branch? Well, you know, incidentally, this morning, when I left, where did I leave? Oh, yeah, Vermont. I checked the House website. And you know what? Even their own website, this morning at least, says this executive office is part of what kind of crap is this? Some kind of fourth branch. No, Leahy, it's not some kind of fourth branch of government. It's Cheney telling you again to go F yourself, you moron! This is our Democratic Party leadership. My God, standing there like a half-witted 10-year-old, Patrick Leahy, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. I checked their website this morning, and you know what?
Go ahead, guess.
Come on, guess. You know what I found on their website? There's a thing there that says they're still part of the executive branch.
Leahy then took some questions from the press, including this one about what Leahy will do if the Bushies continue to ignore his subpoenas. The reporter said, what's your next step to ensure their compliance?
Well, I had hoped that by now they would have answered. They haven't. When the Senate comes back in session, I'll bring it up before the committee. And I prefer cooperation to contempt. But right now, there's no question they're in contempt of a valid order of the Congress.
So what are you going to do, Senator? You prefer cooperation? I prefer sprinkles on my ice cream cone. What the hell does that mean? You prefer cooperation? When have you ever gotten it? When has anyone in any position of leadership in the Democratic Party in Congress gotten anything from this corrupt, filthy Nazi administration but the middle finger? And in your case, Leahy, right in your face, go F yourself! You prefer cooperation. What planet do you live on? Senator.
Oh, Mike, now come on. You're not supposed to attack Democrats. Remember Reagan's rule, the 11th commandment.
Last Q&A from the Leahy press conference yesterday. This one's very revealing. Cheney not only thinks he's about the executive branch's obligations to Congress, he apparently thinks there simply is no check to his power. And, of course, I think Leahy probably scratches his ass and wonders if there really is. The reporter says to Leahy, is your impression that they're dragging their feet?
Well, you know, a lot of these questions were asked by the former chairman a couple of years ago, and we haven't gotten an answer. Mm. In fact, we were about to issue subpoenas then, and one of the senators came to our meeting and said that the vice president had met with the Republican senators and told them they're not allowed to issue subpoenas. Not quite sure that's my understanding of the separation of powers, but seemed to work at that time. Now we have issued them. And interestingly enough, I point out that every single one of these subpoenas, they've been issued by a bipartisan vote. There's been no close votes on them. So I would hope they'd fill in. If not, the committee, the full Judiciary Committee, will have to sit down and determine whether to seek contempt from the full Senate.
Oh, yeah, that'll happen. That'll happen, yeah. And interesting enough, I point out every single one of these subpoenas, they've been issued by a bipartisan vote. Ooh, really? you know, a couple years ago. We haven't gotten an answer from then. Back when my good friend Arlen Specter over there, when he was the chairman, and now I'm the chairman, and they still tell us to go F ourselves. And I'm not quite sure that's my understanding of the separation of powers, but, it, you know, it seemed to work at the time. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do. I if I don't go back to Vermont, maybe I'll just send out for pizza. I can't understand why Cheney doesn't come. I just underestimate me.
I have come to teach the world about democracy. I'm running on the legs of responsibility. So if you love me or you hate me, don't underestimate me. And now a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
22 past the hour. This is from tomorrow's New York Times, and thanks to Richard, Arizona State University, for sending me the link. Remember, was it last week, the bombings in near the Syrian border, a series of truck bombs in Iraq near the Syrian border, the one that happened just after the story about Iraq standing up and making progress. In tomorrow's New York Times, it reports now that the death toll from that explosion is over 500, with 1,500 wounded. My God, this is what it says. 1 week after a series of truck bombs hit a poor rural area near the Syrian border, the known casualty toll has soared to more than 500 dead and 1,500 wounded, according to the Red Crescent Society, making it the bloodiest coordinated attack since the American-led invasion in 2003. The toll, according to the director of the society, Dr. Saeed Haki, the toll may yet rise. Emergency workers continue to drag body parts from the site's dusty rubble. Hospital officials report that hundreds of families had taken their loved ones home broken despite the threat of infection. It's just astonishing, what American media reports and doesn't report. We'll talk about this tomorrow. Let's go to your phone calls now, if as promised earlier in the program. Start with Jock, who's calling from Austin, Texas, listening via the internet. Hey, Josh, or Jock, I'm sorry.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Hey, first of all, I want to thank you for that DVD y'all were giving away a couple of months ago.
Oh, great, great. I'm glad you got it. The mail still works.
It still works. Snail mail still works.
Good.
Hi, I have a couple of things I want to say. I'm a little nervous. It's my first time calling, but I listen to you all the time. You know, I'm over here in Texas, and I'm going to tell you just a couple of things of why I'm a liberal, and I wish there were more around me. I'm glad I live in Austin, near Austin.
Right.
I'm a veteran. I'm an American of Mexican descent. I have a gay brother whom I and my family love with all our heart, and I'm married to an Irish-American woman.
you've got an interesting family, pal.
So I'm not, they're not going to want me in the Republican Party, and that's fine by me.
Yeah, but I'd like to come to your family reunions.
My wife loses track. I got a big family on my mom's side, a big Mexican-American family. So,
yeah.
I wanted to talk about the apathy that we have in America when it comes to it. And I think part of the problem, I think a lot of people don't realize is we are bombarded by marketers every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And we get lost in all the, with our cell phones and our iPhones and our cable TV, our junk food, our football teams. And then we get worried about paying all that stuff. And we just watch our country slip away. And it really makes me angry because of the hypocrisy in the Bush administration, because I think to myself, my grandfather fought in World War One. Yes, World War One. He was a widower. And he was, you know, it's a long story.
Mm-hmm.
And my father was in Vietnam, and I served in the first Gulf War. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what did we do? Is this all going to be in vain? You know?
Yeah, I can't imagine what it must feel like to be a veteran who truly served in a sense, thinking that he or she was defending the Constitution, as weird as that defense, weird different forms that defense has taken over the past 100 years in this country. Let's face it. I mean, going back to the Spanish-American War, the U.S. really turned into an imperialist country,
mm-hmm.
and really started knocking people over just because we could. But still, on the battlefield, there are individual acts of dedication and heroism and honor that I don't mean to imply that people go to war to defend the Constitution. They don't. When they're in a battle condition, they're there to defend their buddy.
Yes.
And to get home safely. But if the overarching reason is to defend the Constitution, to be a veteran here in Bushland and see what these rat bastards have done,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how you all do it. I don't know how you do it unless it's in some manner just separating yourself from what you experienced and what you see now. Hold on a second, Jacques. I have to do a break here. Is it break time, Kathy? Yeah, we'll talk when we come back. Let me put Jacques on hold. We'll come back and talk a little bit further because I want to hear some more of what Jacques has to say. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Green or red, this one thing, sure no mystery. Well, my hungry children, they must be fed. But I don't want your millions, mister. I don't want your diamond ring. All I want is the right to live, mister. Will you give me back?
About 25 before the hour, we're talking with Jacques, who called in from Austin, Texas. All right, now, where were we, Jacques?
I think we were talking about my grandfather and my father and how it may have been. Is it going to be in vain that
all the service that people in your country, in your family have given to your country, where it concerns some real risk taking. And I think about all veterans, how you all can handle what you obviously and a lot of people see happening every day in this country. I don't know how you do it.
Yeah, I don't know either. And then I mean, I volunteered. My father was drafted, and it's going to happen during this Gulf War. You're going to see it because Vietnam took a part of my dad's soul, and I saw it every day. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, and it manifested itself in just some, you know, in some ugly things that come with post-traumatic stress.
Sure.
And that's going to live on through thousands and thousands of veterans now. And where's the country going to be able to help them in that sense? I don't see it happening. And it's just a sad thing, and it really, really just gets my goat.
Yeah,
it really does.
There is that, and I think about this. What happens when half a million, or whatever the final figure is going to be, 750,000 invasion of Iraq combat veterans finally realize what kind of a joke bag they were put in by George W. Bush. Now, I'm not saying that every veteran is going to realize that who has served in this war,
mm-hmm.
but so many veterans now, these votevets.org, all these veterans organizations
mm-hmm.
that have been put together by Iraq War combat veterans who understand now how they were lied to. When you take a military force and say to it, X is a threat, we have to stop X, and then you find out after several thousand of your comrades have been blown to pieces, and you've been instrumental in blowing tens of thousands of people away. And then you find out it was a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. You know, I'm not making any excuses for Timothy McVeigh, but according to what I've read, that was one of the things that sent him over the edge.
Yeah.
He was in your war, and he became so disillusioned and furious that now, I hate to even bring that up because it sounds like, I'm making some kind of apology, and I'm not. He what he did was horrific.
Absolutely.
But if you read his... the interview that some of the interviews that he gave before he was executed who was it, Kathy, the author? I'm drawing a blank again. But the interviews that he gave, where he laid out in very clear detail, interviews via mail, Gore Vidal, when Gore Vidal wrote the book Endless War and what was it, Kathy? Perpetual War for Perpetual Peace. In that book, there are lengthy interviews via mail with McVeigh, and it's very clear that McVeigh went nuts and decided that the government of the United States, and that would be the Bush 1 government, was so corrupt in setting up Gulf War 1 that helped push him into the horrendous act of mass murder that he committed. So that's what I get concerned about, Jock. What is going to happen to the veterans who come back from this one and realize what kind of essential lies were pumped into them to send them over there? My God.
The first thing they're going to do if they have a problem with post-traumatic stress is if they're not getting help, they're going to self-medicate. And that's going to be the first thing they're going to do with alcohol or drugs.
Yeah.
And that's just a sad thing. And I just don't know. I don't know what to say. Oh, Mike, can I plug a book because mentioning China earlier, and I want you to get more callers. I don't want to take up more of your time.
Go ahead.
I read Peter Navarro's book, The Upcoming China Wars.
I've heard of that. That's a couple years old, isn't it?
Actually, I think it was just released this year.
Oh, okay.
It was this year. And if you think China has their finger in so many pies, they have arms like Vishnu. They are just everywhere, worldwide.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's kind of a scary book to read, but I think it would be an interesting thing to read.
They're making some incredible inroads into the various countries on the continent of Africa. And these inroads are not good because the Chinese have a strictly hands-off policy. And what I've read is that the result of their dealings with African nations will be the same result as the white European nations.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be a new form of colonialism. You'll
yep.
have a top 0.1% of African leaders who mm-hmm. live in unbelievable wealth, and the rest of the country will be treated like slaves.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, Jack, I hope you call again. It's good talking to you. Thanks a lot.
I will. I listen every night at work.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it very much. All
thanks,
right.
Mike.
Take care. Take care. Nick is calling from Oak Grove, California, listening on KSAC. Hey, Nick.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
Thanks for your patience.
Hey, that's all right. Just on the last point you just made about China,
mm-hmm.
there are almost five times as many Chinese as there are Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So, from a logical point of view, why shouldn't that number of people have a greater right to natural resources than 300 million Americans.
Well, using reasoning or thought processes that would determine that, you're absolutely right. In their minds, of course.
Right. But my other point is this: is that there's a price that we're going to pay in this country because we have really done a lot of very bad things. And it's going to end. What's going to end up is that our country is going to fall, and we're going to have to fall so far and so hard before people start to protest again or people start to take over their government again. Leahy, you brought up Leahy. That guy he's an incompetent fool.
Oh, it's incredible.
I
listened to that sound that Kathy got that I just played, and I'm trying to think to myself, who in the hell is talking like this? And it turns out to be a senator, a chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. My God!
Sounds like a stroke victim,
or a child. I mean, he sounds like an absolute child, like a 10-year-old.
You know, You know, in business, men in their 40s run these businesses, 40s, maybe 50s. Okay, when they're 60, they're getting ready to retire. You know why? They're too old. They're worn out. You know, guys like Leahy, these guys are, there has been. We need young, aggressive people like, you know, like Cindy Sheehan. This woman has got democratic principles, real principles. Pelosi, she's a multimillionaire. Feinstein, her husband's in the military. He makes his millions from the military-industrial complex. I mean, this is the people that are leading us. And they say that they're Democrats. We don't have anybody representing the average common person anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you. All right, Nick, thanks, man. I appreciate what you had to say. Take care. All right, we'll talk again. Jake is calling from Arcata, California, listening on KGOE. Hey, Jake.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
It's going.
You know, it's real unfortunate to hear Senator Leahy sound so weak and timid. You know, one might think that he inhaled some of that anthrax. The deal with these Democrats is apparently they've made a political calculation, you know, all the way from the top, Nancy Pelosi on down,
mm-hmm.
With the exception of the people who support impeachment, which unfortunately are a minority at this point in the, you know, in the Congress. They've made this calculation that it's better to keep Bush and Cheney around for next year's election. They think having Bush and Cheney still in charge will ensure that a Democrat will take over the White House. Of course, what they fail to realize is that George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, they think they're running a dictatorship, not a democracy.
Right.
So to keep these two men in power for another 18 months is completely irresponsible, and any Democratic leader who advocates keeping Bush and Cheney around for another 18 months, you know, they should be voted out.
Yeah, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. For the Democratic Party leadership to constantly, and I don't care what the reason is, to be playing into the smarmy neo-fascism of these people in the Bush crime family, to constantly be saying, well, we're not going to do this and we're not going to do that. I've said it before. It's not up to them. It's in the Constitution. These bastards have violated the segments of the Constitution where the relief is impeachment. So it's not up to a Leahy or a Reid or Pelosi. It's not up to anybody in the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. Now, I realize that someone has to begin the process. Well, Dennis Kucinich already has. It's just that nobody on the House Judiciary Committee has taken Kucinich's articles of impeachment that I believe now has over a dozen co-signers. Nobody, and it's up to the Democrats, and it's up to the Democrats on the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee to do this. They won't do it. And it's not up to them. The Constitution says this is what has to be done. This is the part that makes me furious.
Well, that's right. The language of the Constitution is clear. It says shall be impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors, not if, you know, the party leadership feels like it.
Yeah, or if it's not politically advantageous to leave these corpses in office so that they can win more seats in the next election. The Republicans increased their lead and got the presidency after going after Clinton. Let's never forget that. Hey, I got to leave it there. Thanks a lot for checking in, Jake. Take care. Quick break. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. This is Nova M Radio. Ten before the hour, thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program in Phoenix tonight at KPHX, our flagship station, also answered your calls. Our co-producer, thanks to Billy Foster, who is Nova M Radio's CIO and also the chat room moderator at novamradio.com. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, and everybody who keeps the MikeMalloy.com website running. Especially the message board. Our executive producer is Catherine Bay. Do I have any announcements to make, Kathy? I don't, do I? Okay, back to your phone calls. John is listening in San Francisco, listening on the Quake. Hey, John.
Yeah, Mike. I wanted to talk about working in the system to try to straighten our country back out. But you mentioned something about China here that I think a lot of people are thinking about their incursions and the enormous wealth that we're giving them. It's going to cause a lot of problems down the way. Only thing is, this is all being orchestrated. But I don't know what we can do about that. But I mostly want to talk about our problems here. When they claim that they lost those billions in Iraq, I think most people that have two brain cells put together that can put two brain cells together realize that that money is being used to subvert and compromise every facet of our social society here in America. It's compromising our government and our corporations. And one of those corporations is our media. And we cannot withstand a media that is totally in the pocket of tyrants. We can't withstand that. And so I'm concerned about people thinking that we're going to win against the Bush bunch and whatnot by totally working in the system. I'm hoping that a lot of brainy minds out there, lawyer types and political types, can think of a way to where we have to change the system and the relationship between our media and corporations. Because just to work within the system, I see us losing unless we do something radical.
Well, I hear you, John. I really do. And I think the linchpin in all this is a responsible media. You know, the profession of journalism, we've mentioned this before, is the only one that has a direct and specific constitutional protection in the first, for God's sake, amendment. And given that special significance of a free press in order for to help a people stay free if they want to be, the fact that the media given that protection or the occupation given that protection has failed so miserably here in the past 30 years and especially the past 10 is contemptible. It's horrifying, and I don't see it changing. That's the problem. I see the arise, and I hope I'm right, and I'm just jumping on the bandwagon here. This is not my idea, but I see the rise of a new media, and that is the internet. The problem, if it is a problem with the internet as a source of information that allows us to make rational decisions, is that first of all, there's so much garbage out there because anybody, you know, can be your own media, and there's an awful lot of nutcases that do that. But the second thing is the infinite variety, the infinite choices, I should say, of what's available, how to filter through that. For bad or for worse, and it's been mostly for worse, there was a time in this country where you had three television networks. You had your choice, CBS, NBC, or ABC. That was it, pal. You sit down at 6 o'clock every night and watch the news. There was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And that's where you got your information. And arguably, back then, there was still an element of actual journalism that was being presented by people like Mike Wallace, by people like, Uncle... No, not Dan Rather, the one he succeeded, Walter Cronkite. Jesus, these senior moments just come one after another now. So arguably there was a time in our lifetimes when journalism was still part of television news. It no longer is. The sole function of television, we've talked about this a million times, is to make you forget. And the sole function of television news is to distort that which you don't forget, to completely change it from what it is, to change it to whose benefit? Well, duh, the corporate interests that now control everything. This is a corporatist form of government under which we live. There's no argument here. If you are still wanting to argue that and say, no, it's not true, then you are an idiot. I'm sorry. Yes, I'll resort to name-calling in a heartbeat. Anyone who doesn't think that we have now become a corporatist state is a fool. So the idea that media is somehow going to bail us out is a hopeless idea. There's no hope there. None. Forget it. It's not going to happen. It's not going to be re-regulated. There is never again going to be consolidation or the return of the fairness doctrine. That is gone. That's gone. It's never returning. So that what can be done? You've got to assist somehow, some way, in the rising up of new media, of a new way in Bush's phrase, catapulting the propaganda. Everything that comes from corporate media right now and the government is propaganda. There is no truth there whatsoever. None. Even in the stories that seem to be true, have a foundation of lies. So, forget it where it concerns waking up the media. The media is not asleep. The media is drugged. And the media is owned. And the media has been corporatized. And the media, I should be saying are, not is. The media are gone. They're gone. So it's time to build something to replace it. Thanks for participating in the program tonight. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.